where warp meets weft. Where warp meets weft. This is Weavecast with Sine Mitchell.
Hello, and welcome to episode 38, Color and Design. This episode, we speak with Cameron Taylor Brown, a talented weaver and an educator who loves to break down boundaries, whether it's the innovative way she blends color and weave structure in her art, or how she gets students to collaborate in workshops. We've got some news from the weaving world. After that, we check in with the team behind Weevolution, a networking site for weavers that's currently in development. I apologize for this episode coming in a bit late. I had the most awful spring cold, and my voice is just starting to recover. It was one of those where you cough so much that you feel like you're really getting a workout. I think I've got new abdominal muscles from that cold. I am still working on taking the show to twice a month. The ensemble folks have been really wonderful about coming across with produced audio, and now it's just a matter of me getting my sea legs with the new Weavezine production schedule. And also, you know, getting over that awful cold. And things are starting to settle down post-lunch, and so I've got high hopes for April. I mentioned last episode that I had bought a Zoom H2 for the ensemble folks to start doing their own interview recording. I have shipped that off to Jennifer Jordan. She is our first brave soul to take charge and play with the new gear. She emailed me that the Zoom had arrived safe and sound. I cannot wait to hear what other folks come up with. I think it's just wonderful that there are going to be so many different voices on Weavecast. In the month of March, Bonnie Tarsis did a fundraiser for Weavecast. That is now over, and she raised an amazing $300. And it's a very timely and much appreciated donation because one of my goals of bringing together all of the content I produce under one website and making that content update more frequently was I really wanted to make the website more exciting, make it a part of people's lives, and hoped that would bring more people to the site and get more people excited about weaving. And it has. So much so to the point where I'm now pushing up against my server resources. And actually, on a fairly regular basis, I'm exceeding my limits. I've got a little red bar on my hosting account and some warnings that technically, under the rules, they could shut me down. So I'm guessing that before too long, I will have to upgrade to a dedicated server, which is a little bit frightening because it's very expensive. And I'm grateful that this money has come in and I'm setting it aside to upgrade to the dedicated server and it would cover a couple of months of fees. So big thank you to Bonnie for organizing and running that. And thank you to everyone who participated by purchasing a Mary Miggs Atwater kit. This week I had the honor and delight of presenting a talk to the Whatcom Weavers Guild about Weavecast. And I got to tell them about all the adventures I've been having the past 3 years. It was a wonderful night, great crowd. Lots of fun. I got to see some amazing things that these folks are preparing for the NWIG. And towards the end of the evening, I asked them to do a shout out to the show.
I'm here at the Whatcom Weavers Guild here in lovely Bellingham, Washington.
Hello, Weavecast!
My friend Julie, who I've known since college, sent me a link. It's called Unveiling the Sixth Sense. It's about some technology that's been developed at MIT, and it's just amazing. I'll have a link to that on the show notes. In more somber news, this past month we lost another weaving great. Margaret Brake Windeconnect died on March 9th, 2009 at the age of 72, which just seems way too young. She was the author of several monographs, and I never met her, but I know her through her writing. Some of the titles in my own library are The Pinwheel, An Exploration in Color and Weave Design, Creative Overshot, The Rose Path Motif, and Color and Weave 2. She was a prolific writer. I called Madeline Vanderhoot and we ended up talking a bit about Margaret. And she said that Margaret had just a wonderful sense of humor. She was very artistic and saw right through to the heart of things. She was also amazingly resilient. She suffered a stroke and after that published and continued to weave and just really was an inspiration to us all. Speaking of weaving greats, Russ Groff of Robin and Russ, the mecca that used to exist in McMinnville, Oregon, wonderful weaving shop. He is a delightful weaver who I interviewed for one of the earlier Weavecasts. He is currently in a VA rehab hospital in Vancouver, Washington. If you're interested in sending him a card, which I think would just really brighten his day, especially if it had some sort of weaving tie-in, I'll have a link to his address at the VA Rehab Center in the show notes. Our sponsor this episode is Just Our Yarn. They produce some beautiful hand-painted yarn for knitters and weavers, including tencel in a variety of weights and some simply luminous 60/2 silk. Coming up next, we have Cameron Taylor Brown's interview. This audio was edited and produced by Anna Zinsmeister. Thank you so much for all your hard work. I'm here with Cameron Taylor Brown. Welcome.
And I'm delighted to be here.
So I always start off by asking how people got involved in weaving, because it's such an unusual profession.
When I was in high school, I started getting really interested in fabrics and in sewing. I learned how to sew, and I made a lot of my own clothes. Then when I went to college, I stumbled into the fiber hotbed of the United States without even knowing it. I went to University of California, Berkeley, in the early 70s, which is where Ed Rossbach was teaching. And he just recently passed away, but he was a real guru for the contemporary fiber arts movement. And he connected it to culture because he was really interested in anthropology. So I heard about his classes from a friend of mine in an anthropology class, and sat in. It was the worst title in the world. It was called The Antecedents of Industrial Textiles. Doesn't that sound awful?
Oh yeah, it sounds like a real snooze.
I wouldn't have ever signed up for it if my friend hadn't said, he's amazing, take this class, it's incredible. What he did was he would appear with suitcases full of textiles that he had collected on his travels all around the world, and then he would show them, talk about the culture, talk about how they were used in the culture, and then talk a little bit about how they were made. And that got me so excited, and then I approached him to see if I could get into some of his weaving classes. And the trick was, at that point, the weaving department was a graduate program. So here I was, someone who hadn't even seen a loom before, asking if I could take his class. And amazingly enough, he said yes. So I walked in to a room full of graduate students who were all gracious and wonderful and helped me, and I just started weaving. I got totally hooked. I changed my direction. I finished the degree that I was working on because it was in sociology, and I've always been really related in peoples and cultures. So I finished that out, but I started taking all of my electives in things that would transfer to a textile degree. So then I worked very diligently on that. I took as many classes as I could at Fiber Works, which was a contemporary teaching studio in Berkeley at the time, where a lot of his students who graduated started their own school. Pacific Basin was another one. And so I just absolutely immersed myself in the textile world just as quickly as I could, because I fell in love. And I walked into a yarn store, and it was just this gorgeous, fabulous world, and I just thought, you know, I'm here. It just spoke to me on a really fundamental level, and I feel like in many ways I've never left that yarn store.
Now, do you primarily in your weaving focus on color or on structure?
I focus primarily on how color and structure interact. That really fascinates me because the whole is better than the sum of its parts. It's the two of them together that are so exciting. I think structure is fascinating. Weaving is called architecture in miniature. I love the fact that it's structural. You're not painting on the canvas, you're creating the canvas itself, and there's something really exciting about that. But then what that does to color and the possibilities is something I really like to explore as well.
Can you give me an example of a way you've combined structure and color in your work?
Most all of it for the last...
Well, I asked...
Sorry, but it's like...
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I guess so. Every time you weave, you do combine structure and color. But the reason I'm so interested in this facet of your weaving is a lot of times we tend to group weavers into the color texture weavers and the structure weavers.
Right.
And hearing you talk, you get into that middle point where mm-hmm. you're drawing strongly from both sides of the camp.
I love redefining boundaries.
What's your most fun structure to play with color in then?
I like twill weave combined with something supplemental, because I love colors juxtaposed to each other, and twill weave does that really, really well. And I can play around with the lines. I can play around with how much warp I want to show versus how much weft I want to show, but the colors stay really clear and crisp. And that's important to me because the yarns that I pick are often colors that are already complex, so they look better when they're next to each other as opposed to commingling as they would in more of a plain weave-based structure. If you've seen my work, I use that as the ground cloth, and then I have some kind of supplemental element that plays in and out of that ground.
So for people who haven't seen your work, can you briefly describe what sort of work you do?
The work that I do is always loom-based pattern weaving. Multiple harnesses, often double beam, because I'm playing a lot with either weave structures that require different take-up or yarn sizes that require that, or sometimes both. So I'll create this cloth that's a vehicle for color or for some other statement that I'm trying to make. And then I will take that cloth and I often will cut it up, move it around, embroider on it, do piecing on it, and transform it into more of a mixed media piece. But it always starts with the weaving. That's what drives everything else.
Now, when you're playing with both color and structure, how do you balance those elements so that you get something harmonious and not chaos?
Lots of sampling. Because it's hard. I can't get there all in my head. I have to get there gradually through sampling. And I put on warps often that are way longer than I think I'll need, because to get to the point where they're in balance and working with each other as opposed to being a jumble takes me some time. And I have to weave it and look at it and cut it off the loom and stick it on the wall and step back and really work with it, because they are complicated.
It's an iterative process then. You try something and analyze it and then try a different thing based on what you learned.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I found that over the years, I did less and less commission work, and I used to seek it out because I thought that it would be interesting. But what I found was with commission work, I did all safe stuff because I couldn't do any experimentation, because once you show the sketch and the maquette and whatever it is to the client, you have to produce what you promise. So you can't fool around and experiment and let it take you in another direction. And what I like to do in the work I do now is have it lead to the next step and have it be a little more fluid. I'll start somewhere and I'll do something, and then it may be that I end up liking the back better. And I have to allow that to happen. And I've stopped trying to completely control it.
I've heard you talk about allowing room for chaos and disorder in your designs. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
My particular take on that is chaos to me is just this jumble of threads before they're ordered into any kind of structure. I discovered that I like the chaos piece because often in my early days of weaving, I would spend all of this time developing this beautiful piece of weaving that was completely controlled and finished and beautifully done. And there was something that was so precise about it, I was less interested in it. That's what led me to begin looking at the back of pieces, which are often a little bit more disordered. And sometimes I'll look in the trash can and say, what is in the trash can is the most lively thing I've created all day. So how can I get some of the trash can back in the work? That's why a lot of my work has looped elements that kind of twist around, or unwoven parts. They're always done in a fairly deliberate way because I do like a certain amount of order and repetition, but I like that interplay of the chaos of the unwoven threads and also the beauty of the unwoven threads, because I love the materials before I do anything to them. Most weavers and knitters love our stash, and I just get pleasure out of doing my filing in my studio or stupid paperwork because I'm surrounded by these gorgeous materials that feed me.
I totally understand. I could have a bowl of yarn as a centerpiece on my table if my family would put up with it.
My family occasionally does put up with it. I've done that before.
How cool. Your day job is working as a sales rep for a yarn distributor. How has that impacted your weaving?
What it has allowed me to do is I don't ever have to leave the world of fiber. My day job, which most artists have to have, my day job is a part of my textile life. It might be a different facet of it, but it uses what I know as an artist. It informs what I know as an artist because I'm out there dealing with all the most beautiful fibers that are being made. I know what the new trends are in fibers and I can try them right away. It has put me in touch with some of the world's most amazing textile designers because I often meet them at shows or I'll represent their products and I get to talk to them, and it's really quite inspiring. When I first started my day job, I thought it would be really separate from my artistic life, and I found that once I let those boundaries start merging a bit, it became a much more enriching experience for me.
Since you're doing so much in your artistic life and your professional life with yarn, are there days where you're just like, no more yarn, and you want to walk away and go on a hike or do something else?
Yeah, then I go read a book instead. My office and studio is in a different building. We live in a 1927 house where the garage is separate, and we rebuilt the garage to include a room that is my studio. So when I don't want to look at yarn anymore, I just don't go there. So I have my work area, and then I have my personal home area, and I don't have to see it or deal with it if I've had enough. But I rarely have enough. It's I always want more.
When I was researching you on the web, I noticed you teach a workshop about collaboration. How did that come about, and what do you talk about in your workshop?
The description is probably not as clear as it should be, but the workshop that I taught today, if you'll notice, I've incorporated collaboration into every element of it. So basically, whatever I teach, I think that collaborative learning is really powerful. And so it's not necessarily that I teach workshops about collaboration as much as I incorporate the collaborative process into everything that I teach. And so I can teach different topics, and I can just make sure that the collaborative process is embedded into the teaching. And sometimes it's more overt than others. What I love about putting people in teams is that it takes the pressure off because no one's on the spot anymore. People learn from each other and not just from me. I learn from them because they're free to bring what they know to the group. So I'm not standing in front of the room doing a one-way imparting of knowledge all day long. The whole class becomes collaborative because people are encouraged to participate. And I think that is a really exciting way for people to learn and to teach. It's way more exciting to teach in a collaborative setting than in a setting where I'm supposed to be the only one who knows anything.
I feel like I've just been thrown back to when I was teaching high school and I took all those teaching classes in cooperative learning. Do you have a background in that sort of teaching? Where did this concept come from?
For several years, I worked on an education project for California State Charter Schools. I partnered with an anthropologist friend who loved textiles. So our commonality was textiles, and she had been a college professor as I had been, and we were really interested in figuring out how to do arts-inspired learning in the classroom or design-based learning, whatever you want to call it, where there's active, open-ended questioning and problem-solving rather than everyone converging on the right answer, you know, the bubble in the dot method. And I really object to the current state of education where it's all about teaching to the test. That just makes me completely insane. We were in an environment where No Child Left Behind was increasingly becoming the model, and I'm enough of a rebel that I couldn't stand it, that we started doing our professional development work with classroom teachers based on collaborative open-ended learning so that the teachers could do that with each other and through art do that with their students and make learning inspiring and interesting as opposed to totally boring and dull. I completely believe in collaborative learning because it's just so powerful, and ultimately it's, I think, what we all have to learn to do with each other professionally, because the body of knowledge out in the world is so huge and so broad and so complex that if you don't work on things with teams, you won't get places because you can't possibly know everything yourself.
Have you done collaborative work in your artistic life?
Yes. Early on, I did a series of collaborative pieces with a good friend where she had a really intense job and I had little children. So we figured that if we did a series of small pieces together, it would give us deadlines. They were small. We could work on them faster and actually finish things. It was also a way of visiting because we were both feeling a little isolated in what we were doing. So that was the first kind of collaborative artistic experience I had. We were making these little jewelry pieces, selling them at shows and galleries, and they were woven, and then we'd stitch on them and put little jewels on them, and we called them textile fragments because they really were, and they were really fun. Now more the kind of collaborative work that I tend to do is I'm in two wonderful guilds that I really enjoy, and both of them are juried. What we often will do is we'll come up with themes. Our work is separate, but we're heading towards some kind of common goal because we're going to exhibit the work together. So we'll get together and talk through the concepts and present our work to each other. So just like in this classroom today, we're working separately, but then bringing our own individual solutions to whatever the theme was. We bring it in and share it and discuss it and so learn from each other. And so often I'll get involved in designing something based on a theme that I wouldn't necessarily have thought of myself. So I'm enriched just by coming up with the ideas for the exhibits collaboratively. And I think that's really a lot of fun.
What's an example of a theme that you would have never come up with on your own?
The one for Convergence that we're working on with Designing Weavers is sideshow. It's a circus theme. We were working on what is a circus theme. Are you talking about colors? Are you talking about imagery? Some people went at it saying, I hate the circus. It's animal abuse, so I'm going to have my theme be animal cruelty, because that's what I think of as a circus. And my husband pipes up to me because I'm coming home going, I have no idea how to approach this. It's not my colors. And he said, Florida, the circus. What about that political circus from 2000? So I thought about it and thought about it, and I said, that is great. So I'm going to do a piece that has to do with tents and hanging chads and nine little double woven squares, five of them kind of frayed. It may be that the viewer won't get it because it's not literal, but I've had so much fun just thinking of all of the meaning that's behind the piece and then interpreting it into the structure and the colors, and it's just a total hoot. And I would never, ever have gotten there had Design and Weavers not put up this theme that we all struggled with. And then, you know, I was kind of discussing it and puzzling it out, and I'm really excited about working on it because it's challenging me and it's a bit of a departure.
Are there any downsides to collaborative work?
The downside could be that you end up compromising sometimes. And for me, I don't think that I do that because I try and come at it from an angle that I can get behind and really enjoy. But I think we all remember those awful collaborative team projects in school where I was the good student, so I ended up doing most of the work and then somebody else did nothing. And I think that's the downfall of a bad collaboration. But when you're collaborating in a team where you trust the people on the team and they've all come through for you before, then I think that goes away because you trust the team. So I think it's all about the environment and the team and learning to truly go at it.
What advice would you give someone who is thinking about working collaboratively?
To pick your team carefully.
any tips for team building?
I say that sort of facetiously because I've done team building with people who started off being really hesitant or people who were practically snarling at each other. And I think a lot of team building is coming up with a common goal that everybody can get excited about, talking it through so that everybody makes a contribution and the contribution is valued. And so I think it is something that builds over time. And if you can work with the same team over time and make sure that no one voice dominates and you all begin working together and valuing each other's contributions, then you have a team that starts working. And sometimes that can take facilitation, and then the facilitator drops away. There's lots of literature out there about how to collaborate appropriately. Amanda and I, my anthropologist friend, did a lot of that research for this project and pulled out what worked. It was pretty interesting. Some of it was business manuals. Some was more like Zen type books. Like, you know, I would go to New Age bookstores and look at stuff on creativity. And so it was creativity in groups and that kind of stuff. Even Bob Dylan's autobiography, where he talked about the need for alone time, but then how collaborative recording music was and how he sort of worked with all of the people and didn't know what would happen and having to trust them. And so I think that kind of reading informs how I work collaboratively with groups.
What's next for you?
What is next for me, I think, is recognizing that my children are growing up, so I can spend less time and energy parenting and more time and energy doing and building on what I'm already doing, because I love what I'm doing. The longer I do it, because I challenge myself to not always do the same thing, I think the richer it gets and the more interesting it gets. And as long as that's the case, I'll just keep doing it. I don't feel like I have to change paths. I'm just going to continue to head down the one I'm already on. I think that everybody innately has a creative spark in them. It's just there because the human species is very versatile and creative, or we wouldn't have made it. We're not the strongest, we're not the fastest, so we had to be the problem solvers and the creative ones, or someone would have eaten us long ago. I think that the one thing that guild members or avocational crafters need to, I think, realize is that they know more than they think they know. They've joined guilds so that they can learn more. They can learn from each other. They can learn from books. They can learn by looking. There's that whole informal way of educating yourself that is equally valid to the path of getting a degree. And particularly if you're doing it for yourself and not necessarily to get hired by somebody else. It's not about the degree. It's about what you know how to do. And so I say, go do it.
Los Angeles, she's a lady, all dressed up for a riot, with a hand on the remote control. She's flipping stations, watching car chases, watching car chases. Seattle, she's lonely, waiting in the northern woods, soaking wet and green, drinking caffeine.
Pushcart Wagon, LA was our Alamo. When I go looking for music to play on the show, I try to tie it in with the theme of the show, but unfortunately, I couldn't find collaborative learning as a song title. So I ended up searching on Cameron Taylor Brown's hometown, LA, and I found this song. And although it has nothing to do with weaving, I just loved it. And I laughed at the city of Seattle being a woman in the woods, highly caffeinated, because that pretty much describes my state of being. Coming up next, we have an interview with the founders of Weevolution. Weevolution is a social networking site that's being developed for hand weavers, and it's set to launch sometime this summer. We got together over Skype, and you can hear them talking about their project in just a moment. I'm here via Skype with the founders of Weevolution, which is a new website coming out very soon.
I'm Allison Giacchetti. I am the accountant business person of the group. I've been weaving for over 25 years, except I've been extremely inactive due to work. and I travel almost 100% for my work, so you know how looms are. They're not terribly portable.
I'm Claudia Siegel. I'm the advertising, marketing, anything administration falls to my lap. And I have been weaving about 3 years.
I'm Tian Chu. I'm the development side of Weevolution. I'm a web project manager by profession, and that's what I'm doing for Weevolution.
Well, welcome all of you, and thanks for being on the show. I guess the first question that's in people's mind is, what exactly is Weevolution, and what are you trying to accomplish with the site?
Weevolution is, we put together a number of words that we feel represent Weevolution and what we're trying to accomplish. Weevolution is a global community of hand weavers. We hope it will be. Inclusion is one of the main words that we see to define the website, and community and welcome. We'd really like the site to reflect the diversity of global hand weaving, and just that everybody be invited to come and join, look around, sign in, get a password, use a notebook, whatever you'd like to do. It's all there for you to enjoy and take in.
You said sign in. Is there going to be access for anonymous users on the site?
Weevolution will be as accessible as possible to the anonymous user. We're trying to spread information and build a community in the hand weaving site. So virtually the entire site will be accessible to people who are not logged in. So you can browse other people's projects. You can look at information on looms, on yarns, and you can look through our library of weaving drafts without logging in. The things you need to do to log in are obviously, in order to post content, you have to join. You have to have a username. In order to store your projects on Weevolution or to take part in the weaving forum, or any of our private group forums, you would need to be logged in. Basically, we only require you to log in when we need to store information that you've given us.
Getting back to what Weevolution is, a lot of people are familiar with the knitting social networking site Ravelry. Is it the same kind of feel that you're going for, or is it something different?
We're really focused on hand weaving and, you know, fiber as it relates to hand weaving. Lots of sites have influenced what we hope to do on Weevolution, not just Ravelry. We've tried to take pieces of social networking sites that are all over the internet and take what we hope and assume will be the best pieces of those social networking sites and put them into what we're doing.
One of the differences that was really important to us is just that idea of people being able to access all the information without having a login. So I think that's a pretty big departure from Ravelry, that we got the idea from what we wanted and from other social networking sites.
There's a limited number of ways of building a social networking website for crafts. So our structure is not that dissimilar to Ravelry's, but our intent is completely different. We're focusing on weavers. There are weaving groups on Ravelry now, but Ravelry is not built for hand weavers. So they don't have things like drafts, and they've actually asked people not to put up weaving information on Ravelry. The other thing that is really different about us is that, as Allison said, that we're very accessible to people who do not belong. And we feel this makes for a much more inclusive social network than Ravelry's.
One of the things that has always been a frustration for me is not to be able to have everything in one place. There are so many wonderful things on the internet, but everything is so piecemeal for hand weaving. There's nothing that brings it all together. And it's a big chunk to try to take off, but that's what we're trying to do. That's what we're hoping to be able to do, is to invite people in because we are wanting to offer them a huge resource that they will find useful and that they will want to participate in and to, you know, to make better, to bring what they have to offer to it as well.
Are you envisioning your site as a one-stop shop for weavers?
We'd like to be. That's the goal. It's a big goal. I think we're all agreed on that. But it's certainly what our goal is to be a one-stop shop. If it's not there, we hope that other people will work to create it through the user groups and the forums.
Also, we plan to develop the site based on the feedback we get from the members or the users, whether they are members or not. Anybody who emails us with ideas, we review those ideas and consider whether they'll be included in the first version or in future versions, based on the importance of getting the site online as fast as possible and then also budget constraints.
How did Weevolution come to be?
I had been kicking around the idea of having a centralized hand-weaving resource website for some time. And at the time, I was working for a company that developed social networks. So I was actually developing and defining social networks, and I thought, wouldn't this be a fun thing to do for weavers? And then I thought about it some more, and I said, but I don't really want to be the administrator for a social network. I don't want to deal with, you know, people's accounts or moderating groups or things like that. And so I kind of tabled the idea. And then sometime later, Sign introduced me to Claudia, and Claudia was willing to do the administrative work that I didn't want to do. And that was how we hatched the whole idea for Weevolution. It's interesting because it actually evolved a great deal. I was originally envisioning myself writing most of the code for the site. And we realized fairly quickly that that wasn't going to happen because my limited time and my limited technical expertise, I'm not a software developer. So we sent out an appeal to the weaving lists looking for volunteers and looking for help. Allison answered and became our accounting partner, and a surprising number of people donated things to us. That enabled us to hire. Initially, we were doing it as an all-volunteer effort, and eventually we realized that the scope was just too large. And by then, we had raised enough money that we could actually outsource, hire a developer for a good portion of the site. And so that's what we're doing now.
The other thing, too, I think, was that we realized that we wanted so much to be included in the site so that it would be welcoming to a very broad range of people. We'd like to see basket weavers and people who use rigid heddle looms and people who use Navajo looms and people who use little hand peg looms and people who use huge production looms and dobby looms and very complex weaving structures and things to feel welcome and included in the site. So that meant developing a far more complex site.
Who did you end up working with?
We're working with a company called Pulse Solutions. They are based in New York, but they also have an India development team. We went through and designed their wireframes for them. They have turned it into designs, and they're currently coding it up. They should have the alpha version ready for us in probably about another week or two.
How do you see Weevolution fitting in with the currently existing weaving websites, like the online Yahoo groups, handweaving.net, and WeaveZine?
We view it as complementary. We're not out to be the one site to rule them all, but we feel that there is a gap that is not being filled by the Yahoo groups, because with the Yahoo groups, you can't really share your projects. You can't really share your drafts. And for yourself, you can't really create your own project notebook to store all your project information in. With WeaveZine, we don't see ourselves as an online publication in the sense that we don't publish articles. All our content is user-generated. But we're hoping that we can become an online gathering place, a community of weavers, in a way that the other things don't offer.
Personally, frustration that I have with the Yahoo sites are that, you know, I'm going along and I'm trying to explain something and I can't put a picture there. And it drives me crazy. It's really frustrating, and I'm looking forward to being able to do that when we have Weevolution up and rolling.
During your introductions, you had a very different range of expertise. How did that come into play during the planning and development stages of Weevolution?
I have a unique background that I think was very useful. I'm a project manager by trade, and for the last couple of years, I've been doing web project management. I also, at some point, was designing social networks for a company named Wallop, which is no longer in business. And as a result, I have a good background in designing and making sure that the project happens. We have had several very talented volunteers helping us out, and I think that's really been critical.
My background and my training and my profession for 25 years was as a social worker. So I've always worked with people. I've always loved that part of being alive and being around people and working with them both one-on-one and in group. It was an absolutely amazing thing that we did find each other. Allison came forward and said, I want to help, but I don't want to sit in the background. I want to really help and be there up front with you guys. It's been a wonderful balance having three of us. I know when Tian and I were first getting things going and talking about things, and the idea came up of adding a third person, and then Allison came along and said, I really want to join at the top. Tian and I really discussed it and talked about the ins and outs of it, and it just seemed like Allison would be a great third person in the group. And there have been times when that balance has really been important and really been helpful. Behind the scenes and people who've been helpful, I've had a lot of assistance from Marie Carmel, who just came forward and has really been very helpful to me in developing a lot of the advertising and marketing pieces. I've also gotten assistance from Elizabeth, who has a phenomenal online blog, and we just sort of found each other through that. There have just been other people along the way who have just sort of popped in and offered a few things that were very significant and very helpful, and then they've moved off.
I think we should also give a nod towards all the other people and companies that have really helped support us through donating items to be auctioned off to help get us going.
There have been so many people who have been so generous, and that's the part that's been just amazing and wonderful that, you know, helps to keep me going on tough days. You know, the people who have just said, yeah, you know, I believe in you. We don't have anything to prove to them that we're going to be able to do what we want to do. And they believe in us. And that's just been the nicest, most wonderful surprise. The generosity and the kindness of people who really don't know us and who haven't yet had an opportunity to see us in action.
You brought up the hard days. I know from my own projects that no matter how wonderful things are going, there's always some challenges to overcome. What are some of the challenges that you've run into?
For Tian and Allison, one of the challenges is working full time and then taking on the responsibility of this project. They both are very, very busy people. Allison with traveling as much as she has to and with putting in, you know, 14 and 16 hour days on a regular basis. And Tian, the same thing. She doesn't have the burden of the traveling, but she does have a very busy job. For me, some of the challenges have been taking on things that I have not been professionally trained to do. And certainly that's where, you know, the other people have played a big role and have been extremely helpful and supportive at times when I was just feeling like at the end of my rope. For me, I'm retired and disabled, and so there are tough days just physically for me to get through. Those are the days where I've really had to say, whoa, I need to do the least I can do and get back to it tomorrow when I'm feeling better.
I think this is another reason why having three of us has really helped also, because for the most part, not all three of us are slammed at the same time. And so we've been able to pick up for each other where needed.
From a development standpoint, I think the biggest challenge has been that the site evolved from being very simple in concept to being a very complex site. And so the challenge for us was the point where we realized that we just could not do it with a group of volunteers. And so at that point, we realized that we needed to raise the money in order to hire an external developer to do it. And I think that was one of our really big challenges.
What is the most important thing that you want people to know about Weevolution?
We are an inclusive community. We welcome their input. We welcome everybody and anybody who wants to stop by and take a look and join us, or just look around and not join us. I think people need to know that we want to hear both their suggestions, whether they be positive or negative, that we're open to whatever thoughts they'd like to share with us.
What I would want people to know is that we're trying to create a community of weavers, including people who are at a very novice level, all the way to people who have been weaving for 30 years.
The inclusiveness and the broadness are where all three of us set our focus.
It sounds great. When's your launch date, and how can folks find out more?
We don't have a concrete launch date yet. We're going to launch sometime in May, but we haven't decided what exact day it's going to be yet. To find out more, you can go to the Weevolution website, which is www.weevolution.com. Our plan is to do an initial alpha probably sometime in early April, and then with the alpha, we'll probably keep it in-house and maybe 10 people just to get initial feedback on the site. And then after that, we'll probably launch a 4 or 5 week beta with a larger group, probably about 100 or 200 people. And then at that point, we'll take the site live.
I do also want to say that in terms of, you know, how can people find out more, we are going to be getting together at Maryland Sheep and Wool, which is the first weekend in May. I will definitely be there both days. Allison is trying to work it out to join me. It's going to be May 2nd and 3rd.
I might be there.
That's the first I heard that. Wow.
Fine. One thing you should probably know is that I still have not in person met either Tien or Claudia. And I believe that Tien and Claudia just met for the first time a couple months ago. So this has all been done through the internet and through Skype, cell phones, email. That's the only way we know each other at this point.
So it's very much in keeping with the project itself, an online community.
Exactly.
That's absolutely true. So we're going to have a meetup. We'll be sitting at the picnic tables next to the soft ice cream place at Maryland Sheep and Wool and look forward to welcoming people who want to meet us in person.
WeaveCast is brought to you through the generosity of our donating listeners. This episode, I'd like to thank Gina and Rita, and also Bonnie Tarsis for her wonderful fundraising efforts. Our sponsor this episode is Just Our Yarn, producers of beautiful hand-painted yarns for weavers, including tencel and a variety of weights, and some simply amazing 60 over 2 silk. Our production credit this episode is Anna Zinsmeister, whose enthusiasm for taking on new technologies and for the show is just wonderful. Our musical guests this episode are Al Philip and the Woo Team with their song Portentous, which was our ambient music. Carmela's Game, The Revolution Will Be Cybercast. And Pushcart Wagon with L.A. Was Our Alamo.
I'll do like a 1, 2, 3, and then everybody say hello, WeaveCast, and let me give an intro. So I'm here. Is it Whatcom? Did I say that right? I was recording that. I was very neurotic. I'm like, what if I mispronounced the guild name right before the talk, and they're all too polite to tell me?
It's Whatcom like .com.
Whatcom like .com. Like, yeah. Okay.